Turn to Jeremiah chapter 29, Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 11. And if I could have the light on top here as well. I'll talk about the rock bottom truth about God's plan for your life. We have come to a very familiar verse. One of the most loved verses in the Bible. I've heard this verse quoted so often. I've seen it on posters, on signs, on plaques. We give it to Christians when they're discouraged. We will quote this verse. We may write it on a graduation card. You know, God has plans for you to prosper you. And it's one of those verses that has been a great source of comfort for Christians throughout the ages. I discovered a website this week. And I never knew existed before. And it's called topverses.com. And it rates the various Bible verses in the Bible by popularity. Not surprisingly, what do you think is the most popular verse in the Bible? John 3:16, absolutely. Jeremiah 29, verse 11 is rated number 29. So it's right up there. It is a very popular verse that people turn to when they're seeking God and when they feel discouraged, whatever, and this has been a tremendous encouragement to them. And so we want to look at this verse this morning, a very important verse. We want to understand it. And from understanding, we want to go to experience. We want to experience the truth of what God is trying to say to us through this verse. Now, we have to understand the background to this verse to fully appreciate what God is really saying. We don't want to take it out of context. The most important fact you have to remember is this verse was given to people who were discouraged. It was written to a people who had been taken captive in Jerusalem. The people of God, the Jews, were taken captive 1,000 kilometers away to the heart of Babylon and in the capital of idol worship. And in those dark, dark days of captivity, God gave them this verse. And it might just be, this is a verse for you today. The people of God had made two important mistakes in their thinking. The first was this. They thought they would never end up in Babylon. I mean, we're people of God. When there's opposition, God just rescues us. He protects us. God is our refuge and strength, our very help in time of trouble. So they never, ever dreamt they would be in Babylon. I mean, we're in Jerusalem, the capital of city of God. We're safe here. Never, ever thought they'd end up in Babylon. Well, that was a mistake in their thinking. But the second one was this. Once they were in Babylon, they thought they'd never get out. How do you escape Babylon and get back 1,000 kilometers? It was just a formidable thought. We face some of the same dangers. We have expectations from God that He never actually promised. But there's just certain things we expect. If it doesn't happen, we're really, really disappointed. The other problem we make is refusing to believe what He actually has promised. And we start to doubt. So we have our own problems as well in trusting God. There is a chorus that anyone here raised in church, this would have been your youth song in your younger days. Every promise in the book is mine. Every chapter, every verse, every line. Now that's an oldie. That's an oldie goldie. Every promise in the book is mine. We love promises. And here we have a promise from God. So let's see what God has promised so that we can name it and claim it. Here's my first major point. As I look at Jeremiah 29:11, my first major point is this. God is thinking about us all the time. God is thinking about us all the time. If you would read this verse in another translation, the New King James Version, It would say, I know the thoughts I think towards you, which sounds different than I know the plans I have for you. Okay? I know the thoughts that I think towards you. That is actually a more accurate translation from the Hebrew. Because the word for the word plan has the root idea that God is thinking up something for us. But He's thinking. He's thinking. Developing some ideas to go for us. But God's always thinking about us. Wow. We don't always think about others. We're usually too preoccupied ourselves to think about other people. I did forget my anniversary once. Yep, once. Has never happened since. I wonder why. It took till noon to that day till my wife absolutely fell apart. Couldn't believe that I had forgotten. Yet I was wondering why we had a special. The table was nicely set. The fireplace was going. And wow, I came home from the office. Wow, I'm really being treated special today. She never said anything. Of course, she set herself up for failure. It was her fault. So, you know, she's just sitting there thinking, okay, when's he going to catch on? It's a special day today. She never said anything. Till all of a sudden, she just fell apart and going, oh my goodness. And anything I did after that, I might as well quit. But after that, I never forgot. Oh. I forget kids' birthdays. My wife would have to remind me. Oh, did you remember that it's our child's birthday coming up? Oh, no, I wasn't thinking about that at all, actually. And today is our youngest son's birthday today. My wife had to remind me yesterday. Did you know that tomorrow is Caleb's birthday? Oh, no, I totally forgot about it. I wasn't actually thinking about it. Thank you very much. I'm too busy thinking about myself. That's usually our problem, right? We're preoccupied with ourselves. Now, there's enough going on in my life. I don't have to think about other people and what they're going through. There's another truth. We tend to remember the bad things that happen in our lives, not the good things. We just came back from a wonderful holiday. 4 provinces, 11 states, 8,000 kilometers. A driving holiday. Fun. Loved it. Had a ball. Saw a lot of things. Went through Tornado Alley. Stopped by Joplin where they had the big tornado a year ago. And 170-some people were killed or whatever. And you still see all these little white trailers out there in the field, people living in there. They're still trying to rebuild part of the city. And the huge devastation that was there. So went through that, and then we hit the highway, and I'm tired. So I'm have Rachel drive, and I'm going to sleep. All of a sudden I hear, Art! Art, Art. So I'm waking up. What? And there's cars stopped and shoulders and people with their cameras. And what? Oh, there's a tornado. So we just, that's one thing I probably won't forget. But there will be a lot of stops along the way, things we did. And a year from now, she'll say, did you remember when we stopped here? No, I actually don't remember it at all. And the more memories you make, the more you forget. I don't forget anything that happened negatively to me. Anybody says something negative to me, I will always remember. But the good things, well, I forget those. And that's the sort of, we tend to be a little bit selective in our memory, right? Well, wasn't it Willie Nelson who wrote that song, You're Always on My Mind? God says, I'm thinking thoughts towards you. God's always thinking about us. You're always on His mind. Always on His mind. I know the thoughts I'm thinking towards you. So God is thinking about us all the time. Secondly, God's thoughts toward us are good. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. It's not enough just to know that God is thinking of us. I want to know what He's thinking. When someone comes up to you and said, you know, I've been thinking about you lately. What's your first reaction? Uh-oh. Now what did I do wrong? were they good thoughts or were they negative thoughts? So, God's thinking about me all the time. Well, thank you. What kind of thoughts are they? Well, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. God's thoughts are affirming thoughts. I checked different translations of this particular phrase in the Bible. And here I forgot to write down what the translations were after each one. But here are four different translations of this part of verse 11. One translation says, plans for welfare and not for evil. Another one read, plans to take care of you, not abandon you. Another one said, plans for good and not for disaster. And another one said, plans for well-being and not for trouble. Yeah, our natural inclination is to give up or think the worst soon as something kind of turns south. Oh, what's the use? Or will this ever end? Or here we go again, and we just sort of expect things to fall apart. A fortune teller was gazing into a crystal ball and said to the frog, you are going to meet a most beautiful young woman. From the moment she sets her eyes on you, she will have an insatiable desire to know all about you. She will be compelled to get close to you. You will fascinate her. And the blushing frog replied, well, where will I be, in a singles club? And the fortune teller said, no, in a biology class. We tend to often feel like we are in God's biology class. We're always sort of being torn apart. God's goal is not to tear us apart. God's goal is to make us whole. Now, in that process of being made whole and being renewed, we may have to go through surgery. But what is the purpose of surgery? When I went to the Foothills Hospital, the surgeon, Dr. Wise, didn't look at me and go, I can just hardly wait to get to your heart and rip you up. He could hardly wait to see, once he was done, how will my heart work? Will I be better? And when I woke up and when he's done, and he said, Mr. Hildebrandt, got good news for you. It worked. We hooked your heart up to electricity, and we tried to make your heart race, and it can't even race. We even tried to make it won't even race. It's just a steady beat. The operation was completely, totally successful. And the whole purpose was to make me whole. The purpose to go to a dentist is not to have pain. I know that's what you feel. You sometimes have to question the personality trait of a dentist who just loves working your mouth all day. And you're just looking there all tense and nervous. I can appreciate sedation dentistry. I haven't had it, but I think I'll do that next time. Now, what's the purpose of a dentist? To give you a nice white smile. The whole purpose is when it's done, you'll look better, you'll feel better, you'll be healthier. That's the purpose. God says, I've been thinking about you, and I have not been thinking about how to just tear you apart. I may have to do some surgery, yes. But my goal, my ultimate goal is not to harm you. It is to make you whole. It is to cause you to prosper. To prosper. To correct. To reconstruct, to facilitate healing. Let me just add this. This is a verse that has been given by certain kind of preachers out there to use as support that God wants you wealthy. And God just wants to prosper you with all kinds of things. Because it says here, plans to prosper. Do you know what the word prosper means in the Hebrew? It's the word shalom. God says, I have plans to shalom you. I have plans to make you whole. I have plans to give you a deep-seated sense of wholeness and peace. That's the word, shalom. Plans to shalom you. Folks, that's a wonderful verse for Africans. You know what the latest wave in Africa is right now? It's all these health and wealth preachers from the States going through Africa, preaching health and wealth. And you can see, I was watching this on the internet. And they showed pictures. Yeah, they got videos of these big preachers, nicely dressed to the nines, just causing all these people to come bring their last little few, pennies to them so that God will bless them in return and make them rich. And you see all these poor people giving this rich preacher all their money. And I was just watching it this week. And it's the latest wave going through Africa. That whole teaching. And it was showing the devastation that it has caused in so many areas. God did not promise to make you a millionaire. But God promised to give you shalom. To make you whole. To make you well. To give you a deep-seated peace when everything else seems to be falling apart around you. Those are the thoughts God has for each one of us. Cause or a desire to shalom us. God is always thinking of us. Secondly, God's thoughts towards us are good. Thirdly, God intends to give us a future filled with hope. Plans to give you hope and a future. The last part of verse 11. Actually, a better translation from the Hebrew would be to give you an expected end. And I like that. That's very hopeful. Plans to give you an expected end. There's only so long God has ordained that you are to go through what you will go through. God has planned an end. And so that's it. You're only going to be sick this long. And that's it. So I have plans for you. You're going to be lonely maybe this long, but that's it. I have plans for you. You may be going through this, but there's an expected end. I have a timetable, and that's it. And I'm going to intervene. I'm going to work for you. That's our God. God has a timetable. I haven't seen it, but it's at work in my life. Fortunately for the Jews, they were told 70 years. You've got 70 years. You're going to be in Babylon. And I'm going to carry you back. God has never given me a number. He said, Art, you're going to do this and this for so long. That's the expected end. And then this is going to happen. He's never done it to me. I do know one expected end. When Jesus comes back. No more hair loss. No more wrinkles. No more this. No more that. There is an expected end when Jesus comes back. Everything will be made well. And I'm certainly looking forward to that day. But maybe you feel like you're going in circles. You're just not making any progress. Maybe you feel like it just seems so dark. I just don't see any light ahead of me. I just have no hope. I have no optimism for my future. And I came across a proverb that I'm sure I've read it before, but it just never, ever grabbed me. This time it did. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 18, and it reads like this. Proverbs 4, 18. The path of the righteous is like the first gleam of dawn, shining ever brighter till the full light of day. We're not children of darkness, we're children of light. And God is slowly bringing us further and further into His light. Greater understanding, greater truth, greater shalom in Him. That is our God. Folks, that's our God. So three major points from Proverbs or Jeremiah 29:11. God is thinking about us all the time. That's a good thing. We don't always think about others all the time. I remember when we first started going to pastor's retreat. And I'd be gone for the first 3 days and I'd come back. And what do you think is the first question my wife asked? So, did you miss me? What do you think I said? At that time, I hadn't learned yet. Well, not really. Had a good time. Whoa! Not a good thing to say. So I learned. I mean, I had too much fun with all the guys. We were just, you know, playing ping pong, doing this, telling stories, having fun, doing this, doing that. And we had a great time. Hi, you put some pastors together, and I'll tell you, we can have a hoot. We forget we've got wives. Well, I mean, in a good way. I'm not saying, okay, just don't get me wrong there. But it's called a retreat. We have a good time. So I learned to say at least, well, I missed you when I then went to bed. Oh, that was much better already. I learned. But I have come to a point, I find that as I'm getting older, I like to be more with her all the time, and I do think more about her all the time. Maybe I'm just finally growing up. Maybe that's a part of aging. I don't know what it is. But yes, my thoughts are much more now continually towards her. My friend, when it comes to God, it has never ever changed. God is always thinking about you. Secondly, God's thoughts towards us are good. God is always working at how to renew and restore us. They are good, not to harm us. Thirdly, God intends to give us a future filled with hope. There is an expected end. Those are the major points we get from this particular verse. Now, with that, I just want to take a few minutes now just to give some application time. That very familiar verse. What do I take from it into my life so I can say, okay, I want to build a little bit more into my life based on some of these promises and etc. Okay, I've got about 7 thoughts here for application. Here's the first one. Number one, God never forgets his children. God never forgets his children. There's an old saying we have, out of sight, out of mind. Ah, you know that one. Experience it yourself, right? 3 times. 3 times in verse 11 in the NIV, he uses the word plans. I have plans for you. I have plans for you. I have plans for you. Remember, the root for that word means to think with the idea to act. 3 times he says, I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about you. I'm thinking about you. God never forgets you. What's been your response at times when someone comes up to you and says, hey, you know, I've got to tell you, I've been thinking a lot about you lately. Oh, good or bad? And with God, it's always good. I'm thinking of you. So God never forgets his children. Secondly, God is always for us, not against us. God is always for us, not against us. I have to be honest with you that I have grappled with that because I come out of a background where I sort of was taught that God is a stern God. And there was times I really thought God is against me. That's the kind of background I came with about God. But I come to realize through life, through Scripture, that God is never against me. He's against things I do. He will oppose me a lot of things, but it's for a reason. He's for me and trying to turn me around, but God is always for us, not against us, in that sense. And nothing happens by chance or for no purpose in my life. I like what one writer said, quote, every affliction is timed and measured. Every affliction is timed and measured. God says it's only for so long, and that's it. So long, and that's it. Yes, I carried you to Babylon. I thought about you in Babylon. I protected you in Babylon. I'm blessing you in Babylon. I'm giving you a hope and a future in Babylon. And after 70 years, I'm going to bring you back out of Babylon. It was all for your good. I was never against you. In all that process, I was for you. No matter how badly they'd blown it, he was for them. Thirdly, it's in the hardest of times that God works his deepest. It's in the hardest of times that God works his deepest. Why is God trying to do certain things, allowing his children to go through certain hardships and experiences? I've got about five things just to briefly share with you. First of all, when I'm going through hard trials, it may be, first of all, to purge me of certain things. To purge me from leaning on false expectations, or to purge me from sin. There's always a purging process involved when God brings me through difficult times. Secondly, God uses our sufferings to test our faith. Will I obey God just in the sunshine, or will I obey Him in the darkness? God's testing me. Thirdly, God uses times of difficulty to humble me. It's very difficult to be humble when things always go so well. It really is. It really is. But in hard times, when that brings me to my knees, that's the place of greatest blessing. It's a place of greatest learning. Fourth, God uses hard times to prepare us to minister to others. Because we have lost, we've had a loss in our lives, in our family, it has equipped us in a better way to minister to people who've experienced a loss. Usually, the areas that we've gone through are great areas of ministry to others. We can say, I've been there. Let me share with you some of the comfort, some of the things God taught me as I walked through that. And we can walk through with people on that. So sometimes it's not just about us, but it's to prepare us to walk with others through difficulties. And one other thing, of course, is to prepare us for a new understanding of the character of God. I have to admit, these last 2 years that we have gone through in the ups and downs and difficulties of selling our house, I don't know how much I have learned about more about God, but I've learned things about myself I don't like. It has revealed certain things about me that aren't always most trusting and pure and perfect. I realize that there's things in my life God has to wean and work on to refine me more. Those are all things God wants to do when we go through difficult times. So it's in the hardest of times that God works His deepest. Fourthly, sometimes God has to slow things down for us so we can hear Him better. Now, in Branson, if you've been there, I mean, that town is just loaded with theaters, live entertainment. It is one of the prime live entertainment capitals in the world right now for live entertainment. We went to a show, and we had been looking forward to this for 2 months already. We checked this online. There's a group called Alabama Revival. Now, it wasn't Alabama itself, but it was a group that sings all the Alabama songs, and they sounded like Alabama. Well, they sang one song that I thought, this would make a good theme song for the average North American person. The title of the song is I'm in a Hurry and I Don't Know Why. Remember that song? First words go like this. I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really got to do is live and die. But I'm in a hurry and I don't know why. We're always rushing. We're always uptight. We're always dealing with deadlines and schedules, usually self-imposed. We're even in a hurry to serve God. We're in a hurry to get God's work done. There's a Chinese saying that says, sometimes slow is best. And once in a while, God just has to bring us to a point just to slow life down, slow things down, just so I can hear Him better. What's God doing in your life right now? Fifth point. If we know Jesus, we will have what we need when we need it. If we know Jesus, we will have what we need when we need it. The Jews were perfectly in God's time, and they would receive exactly what they needed when they needed it from God. Not sooner, not later, just right then. You're here right now because you're meant to be here right now. If you needed to be somewhere else right now, you'd be there. But you're here because of the providential oversight of God to give what you need right now. If we know Jesus, we will have what we need when we need it. And that is a promise that we can take into our everyday week. Here's my sixth observation or application from Jeremiah 29, verse 11. Our true prosperity is in our relationship with Jesus Christ. Our true prosperity is in our relationship with Jesus Christ. You will notice after verse 11, what does it say? So, now I will make you millionaires, I will do this, I will do that, and everybody will drive a Cadillac, and you'll have deluxe hubcaps on your chariots, and all that stuff. No. What does verse 12 say? You will call upon me, and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you, and you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. The greatest prosperity is the shalom when He has control of our lives. Oh, and things will get right in our heart with God. F.E. Marsh has enumerated some of the blessings that are ours when we are in Christ. And this is true of all believers, including all our African brothers and sisters from everywhere else, rich or poor. Here is our prosperity in Jesus Christ. According to Ephesians 1:6, we have an acceptance that can never be questioned. According to 1 Peter 1:3, we have an inheritance that can never be lost. According to 2 Corinthians 1:10, we have a deliverance that can never be excelled. According to 2 Corinthians 12:9, we have a grace that can never be limited. And according to Hebrews 6:18 and 19, we have a hope that can never be disappointed. And according to 1 Corinthians 3:21, we have a bounty that can never be withdrawn. According to John 15:11, we have a joy that need never be diminished. According to Ephesians 2:13, we have a nearness to God that can never be reversed. According to John 14:27, we have a peace that can never be disturbed. According to 2 Corinthians 5:21, we have a righteousness that cannot be tarnished. According to Hebrews 5, verse 9, we have a salvation that can never be canceled. God has a plan for your life. Plans for good. To cause you to shalom in His goodness and His life. Our true prosperity is in our relationship with Jesus Christ. And lastly, the sermon title is The Rock Bottom Truth of God's Plan for Your Life. Well, I've gone through all the sermon to get to the last part. My last point, that is this. What you see determines what you seek. What you see determines what you seek. If all you see is Babylon, then you'll be miserable and you'll just try to get out of Babylon. And you'll fight it. If you see the hand of God, you will seek to be faithful, to persevere, to be patient, to be steady, and to be hopeful. What you see will determine what you seek. Do you see the hand of God in your life? And I close with this last one-liner from Corrie Ten Boom. Never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God.